Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, August 7th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hiya.
I'm so glad you're with us today. Also with us today, Bella in hand, John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, good to be here.
I'm so pleased you're here with us, partly because we need to discuss MacBook ports, laptop ports, because we're talking about two different laptops. So we need to talk about laptop ports. What's your stance, John?
Well, it all started when I did that four-part article about the MacBook Pro failure and jumping through hoops and doing testing and connecting devices and unconnecting devices and testing devices. And the MacBook Pro, the 2018 we have, is four ports. And it seemed at times like four ports was barely enough to do all the testing and connect devices. And the result was a different perspective on the two ports that are on the MacBook Air. Now, I have a MacBook with one port, and I acknowledge that I had to have a USB hub, and it's been working fine. But I don't use it very heavily, and I don't have an external display. And I don't have it connected to a printer. I use over-the-air printing. And it's a light-duty machine. But I can imagine how a person who opts for a MacBook Air and presses it into serious use would feel a little bit cramped by having just two ports after what I've been through with this repair issue and testing issue and variable isolation and docks and hubs and all of this. And I started wondering, what is it that makes the Pro a Pro? I mean, it's the power of the computer. It's the CPU, the graphics power, the memory, the button, the memory bus bandwidth. These are the things that make the machine more capable and more powerful to get your job done and more tackle bigger tasks.
Sure.
But so do you really need to have a strangulation on the MacBook Air to punctuate that the fact that the MacBook Pro is somehow a pro machine? And I started thinking about that, and I realized that, you know, why not? Why be so stingy? Why artificially constrain the MacBook Air with two ports? If you can put four on a MacBook Air case, you can put four on a Mac. If you can put four on a MacBook Pro, you can put four on a MacBook Air.
Okay.
Without too much trouble.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you and your leaf blower. And here's why. Because while it's a valid argument, like I want more ports on this machine, here's the thing, is that I don't know that it's necessarily because the Pro is the Pro machine, so it gets all the ports, right? I think it's because the Air, while some people use it as a daily driver, when it was introduced, its whole point was to be a satellite machine, an ancillary machine. A computer that you don't, that is not necessarily a daily driver. Like, the Pro is meant to be somebody's daily driver. I have a MacBook Pro.
The MacBook Air has evolved from that point. The original MacBook,
I disagree,
Air had one USB-A port.
Yes,
and
it did.
Was considered a strangulation of the machine's capability. But then everybody said, well, you know, it's really just a mobile machine. You use it on the airplane. You use it on travel. But the MacBook Air has grown and flourished and become the go-to everyday workhorse for a lot of people who can't afford a MacBook Pro.
Okay. But that doesn't mean that the point of it is still, like I said, it can be some people's daily driver. A lot of people have an iPad as a daily driver, which comes back to technological honesty, which I talk about here all the time. If you sit down and you really think about what you're doing, if you go to upgrade your computer, you may not need something with a hinge and a keyboard and a trackpad. You might be fine with an iPad to do the stuff you needed to do or want to do. And that might be great for you. But that being said, the point of the Air, even still, I think in Apple's lineup, is to be that satellite device. This is what I take to conferences, but when I sit down at my desk and do actual stuff, I'm doing it on a mini, on a Pro, like you, on an iMac of some flavor. So if this is going to always be the satellite machine for most, if the point of it is to be the satellite machine, I understand that's not what it is for 100% of its users, then I think the right tool for the job doesn't need all those ports.
Well, that's a little bit of arrogance right there on Apple's part. You know, we expect you to buy a desktop machine like an iMac, but to supplement the fact that this machine can't substitute for your whole life.
Give Charlotte.
I'm jumping because I think actually John is missing a really key issue. And I hate saying that. I feel like a heinous saying that about John. But the point is, I think most users now don't plug in that much stuff. I don't think the stuff that we plug in, I don't think we're particularly good examples.
No.
I know a lot of people that would never, ever plug stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that actually cloud services, a lot of the things you name that people might plug in are now happening in the cloud. Okay, Time Machine. Well, most users probably just use Dropbox or Google Drive or something and don't have a hard disk.
Right.
External display, they're increasingly HDMI ports. Keyboard and mouse. I mean, if you're still plugging in a keyboard and mouse, I don't know what's going on. If you're using an Apple keyboard and mouse, that's Bluetooth. Most other top range, decent keyboards, mice, trackpads, whatever,
aren't going to take a port.
Bluetooth.
Yeah.
So at the moment, I've got rid of three. Printer, okay. I mean, printing is an issue. I think less and less people are printing.
This is true.
And they're also AirPrint or Bluetooth available ones. But yes, you might have to plug in a.
Well, if that argument is valid, Charlotte, then the MacBook Pro only needs two ports. If that entire scope of argument is true, and Apple really understands how people don't plug anything in anymore, then why not put just two on the MacBook Pro and save some money and effort?
Probably does, but I can see why I'm about to fall into the trap here and say on a Pro device, but I can understand the MacBook Pro is the kind of device that you might build a desk around, right?
Yes.
If you're a more advanced user, say you're probably not going to build a recording studio or a video studio around it, but you might build a little decent home office around it,
right? As I have done.
That's not correct, and that's not what a Mac Air is for.
No.
And yes, you're right, it is arrogant for Apple to assume you have.
It may not be
devices.
What it's for, but I think a lot of people press it into service anyway because they can't afford $2,500 or $2,800.
They can still buy a very cheap, decent dongle, have increased specs if they actually need it. Like most users, I suspect, don't need that many ports.
Well, that's the second thing I just tweeted about to Jason Snell, and that is we've been inured to the fact that we're just going to have to go out and buy a dock because we don't get enough ports on the computers.
But that gives you more flexibility. What's wrong with that?
But also, John,
Charlotte just said to spend money buying accessories that we shouldn't need.
Well, Charlotte
I'm
just said, like,
advocate to a certain point here too.
Building your desk, building a home office around a MacBook Pro, right? And I'm not convinced that lots of people have that set up anymore. And if they do, like, honestly, and I for the record, I do look forward to your letters. If you're a person who has any kind of dock setup and you're using an Air with it, especially, I definitely want to hear from you because I am reasonably convinced that a lot of people went laptop. You know, we hear about how everybody buys a laptop. Everybody's got a laptop. People aren't really buying desktop machines anymore. And I think part of that is because people aren't using them on a desk. I mean, I could not tell you in the history of my mom's laptops. Let's use her as an example because I'm very familiar with her setup. My mom doesn't have a computer desk. My mom did have a computer desk years ago, and then she got a nicer laptop that didn't have to be plugged in all the time and never really sat at her desk anymore. So her computer literally lives in the little magazine section of the coffee table next to her chair where she likes to sit in the living room. It lives there. She picks it up, puts it on her lap, does what she wants to do, closes it back up, and puts it back under the end table until it needs charged. So that's like, my mom doesn't have a desk. She has a mouse. She does have an external mouse that she uses, but she doesn't have a desk. My dad doesn't have a computer desk. My dad doesn't have a computer. He's a tablet that he uses for things. my stepdad uses an iPad all the time. My dad's wife occasionally opens a laptop, but mostly does what she wants to do on her phone. So I know loads of people with all sorts of different computing setups, and I'm the only one in any of these equations that has a computer desk or a place where I hook anything external up to it besides like a USB drive or like my mom's mouse, which doesn't, again, doesn't use a port. It's a Bluetooth mouse. So like that's, I think part of it is that the evolution of using a computer has changed dramatically, and people aren't hooking up to monitors and stuff anymore.
I understand that, Kelly. I know that there's all different use cases. I know there's people who press a MacBook Air into service when they should have bought a Pro. I know there's people who are very highly mobile and hardly connect anything anymore. I had one reader on Twitter say that he hardly ever connects anything to his MacBook Air, and he doesn't need that many ports. So I understand there's all these use cases. But what I don't understand is why Apple thinks that 4 is better than 2 and that a MacBook Pro must have 4 and a MacBook Air must only have 2. I still don't understand that logic.
Well, think about your computer, John. You have a MacBook and it only has one port. So at some point, they gave people another port on the MacBook Air.
The first thing I did after I got the MacBook was write an article about how everything you can do wirelessly.
Yeah.
So I understand that.
But that doesn't change the fact that they did put more ports on the Air. So, like, I mean, that's a thing to consider.
Well, just this one port, two port, four port escalation just seems to be to me an artificial way of Apple forcing the issue and forcing you to think about how many ports you have. You shouldn't have to think about how many ports are on the computer.
I always have to think about the number of ports on my computer, but I admit I'm not people.
I mean, if you're the type of So I think there's a couple of things here. So first of all, I just looked at the back of my Mac Mini, and that's got two ports, two USB ports. Now, I confess I was slightly irritated about that because, that is a computer that is clearly built for a desk. Obviously, it's one you're obviously going to have to plug stuff into. I already had a hub. I plugged it in. It works great. Fine. No problem. Mm-hmm. But... So, and I see the MacBook Pro in that, as I've said, just said earlier, I see the MacBook Pro in that vein. It's the type of thing, if you're going to still be the type of user that has a computer desk, you're probably more leaning towards the MacBook Pro, and you probably do want a couple more ports. I don't think it makes that much difference either way, just because I think if you had two ports on a MacBook Pro, but some users bought a hub, I think that would work fine as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah, but not only do you have the two USB-A's on your Mac Mini, but you've got four USB-C's. So you got a total of 6 with the right connector cable.
Hang on. Should I dive around the back?
Yes. Yeah, take a look around the back.
The middle grill in the back, I see four USB-C's. They're labeled Thunderbolt, but you can use them for USB.
Yeah, they're Thunderbolt. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So really, you have 6.
So really, I have 6. But 2 kind of classic USB-A's, and then, yes, you're right, mm-hmm. there's 4 Thunderbolt ports in there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't use the Thunderbolt ports, which is why I knew there was 2, because I do have stuff plugged into both the... So in a way, that kind of proves my... if you want to look at it as a whole, not just the USB-A's, that kind of endorses my argument a little bit more. The computers that they expect you to build a desk around mm-hmm. have the more ports. The MacBook Air, which is all about being thin and light and portable, mm-hmm. doesn't. It personally makes kind of sense to me.
Me too, because it seems like the trade to make. Because, like, I know people who were using when the 11-inch Air was a thing, and even after it, after it went and all there was like a 13-inch Air, I know a lot of people who had them who said a lot of things like, I wish it were something. I wish it were faster. I wish I had a better graphics card. I wish I had more memory, whatever. But the battery lasts all day, and that's what I need when I am doing the thing I bought the MacBook Air to do. And so I think this comes down to the right tool for the job. And, you know, it's one of those things where... You know, sometimes you can use a flathead screwdriver on a Phillips screw. Like, it won't get you there as efficiently as having the Phillips screwdriver, but you'll get there eventually. And I think that's kind of what's happening. And I don't think there's a problem with only having two ports. I think you have to have two ports so that you can have power.
Well, don't forget, and something else. On the new MacBook Airs, there's no MagSafe. So one of those USB-C ports has to be power when you're on your desktop.
Right. And I can't remember the last time I was... back into. I can't remember the last time I had my computer with all its ports. Because I have an early 15 MacBook Pro, so I have a lot of ports. And I cannot remember the last time I had my computer away from my desk and had more than two things plugged into it.
Well, I guess it's a matter of perspective, because my Mac Pro sitting on the desk has just about every port full because of all the things I do. And my wife has this MacBook Pro, and she has every port full.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, it's mindful to me that I've always been a port-heavy user.
Yeah.
And so if I've got an extra port free and I don't use it, no big deal. But if I'm one short, it's really a pain.
Right. So, but I think this is one of those moments, John, where, like the rest of us, you sort of have to remember that you're not people. I think that's what it is.
I think discussion going. You know, we're shy of ports, and so we just say, well, I'm going to have to go out and buy a hub. And we just live with that idea, and we've been kind of accustomed to that idea for years and years, where we're port shy, and the first thing you do is go out and make up for the fact that you don't have enough ports by buying a hub. And yeah. I guess it's true that if you don't need a hub, you don't use it, you don't have to pay for it, but most people end up having to buy one anyway, and it kind of just got me thinking about why we do what we do and why Apple constrains us and why the MacBook Air. I mean, how much does an extra board cost on hardware on the motherboard?
Well, and but here's the thing is, I don't know if it's most people. And that's why I want to hear from people who have them.
Yeah.
If you're using a hub, please tell us about it. You know, if you are bemoaning.
How do you feel about buying an extra cost hub?
If you're sad about only having two ports to rub together for heat, then please let us know. In the meantime, I want to talk to you about our sponsor today. Our sponsor is MyWallStreet.com. And as you know, when we talk about the stock market here, especially, it sometimes feels like it can be really complicated to start investing in the stock market, if that's what you want to do. Brokers can make it easy to give them money to do the investing, but you can't always tell if you're making the right decision, and it's not always in the broker's best interest, for example, to make sure that you are. They just want to make sure that you're investing it all, and they're not necessarily going to help give you like some good advice along the way. And a lot of times that whole system seems like kind of a black box that you can't really get into. And like John, you know, it's probably a box that only has two ports. And they don't offer much in the way of guidance as far as helping you get along that path. So it's easy to get overwhelmed, and that makes it easy to give up. Enter My Wall Street. They have a short list of stocks, and their investors have spent many, many hours researching this short list. Some of the ones on that list have grown fivefold since they made it on that list, so they might be onto something. My Wall Street is not a brokerage, so they offer much simpler investing options, more like a companion to you than a broker. And as a TDO listener, you can access the entire app, all the advice, all the investment opportunity for free for 30 days instead of the regular 7-day trial that they offer. Here's how you do that. You visit mywallstreet.com/TDO. That's mywallst.com/TDO. Download the app now, and you can access everything there and continue down that road for $9.99 a month. And we'd like to thank My Wall Street for sponsoring the show today. Now, our other topic is we only have a few minutes for it, but there's a new bug bounty in town that Charlotte has. Well, Charlotte didn't discover the bugs, but discovered the bounty program. So Charlotte, tell us about that.
Yeah, I wish I had discovered the bugs, because Apple starting looks like going to be giving some serious money to people that start finding these things. It was actually I was reading about it on Forbes and shared it on the Mac Observer. Apple went Tuesday, I believe, invited a select few hackers, top hackers, into Cupertino and they handed out iPhones and basically won them to as part of the launch of the bug bounty program. Apparently there are plans to reward people that find these things with up to $200,000, which is rather nice. And they're also doing a one for a for the Mac OS and Mac computers as well. So we've got two bug bounties coming. And this is significant just because Apple previously hasn't paid for people for finding bugs. They haven't provided a bug bounty, and kind of people were... There's been lots of complaints about it in the hacker, the security researcher community. People were like, well, we found... And people have gone to Apple with things and said, look, we found this problem. You know, can you pay me for finding it? And Apple said, no, but thanks for finding it. Yeah. And then the hacker basically said, you know what, I'm making this public then, if you're not going to pay me.
Or sell it to somebody else.
Or possibly sell it to someone else. But it looks like this is going to go properly, formally live at Black Hat later this month. But I do think it's significant that Apple has realized it and now has to, in the way that Microsoft and other big tech companies do, it has realized that it needs to pay out for people that find bugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting that their stance on this has changed, I think. Mm-hmm. And it looks like today is the first day of the actual conference. So any minute now, we might get more official news on this. There was like tech stuff that happened earlier this week, if I recall how Black Hat works. But I think it's interesting that they sort of finally joined the party on this kind of thing, because
it's
been long enough. But I think, up to $200,000. And I think I had seen that. There was
some piece of this that was invitation only, I think. And well, this was the beginning. This launch was, I think they're going to be very strict about who they let in.
Yeah.
They're still not, it's not going to be a free for all from the way I read it. And it certainly isn't at the moment. Now, there was only very few people that were invited to Apple Park yesterday.
Yeah. And it's going to be, I'm interested to see how this evolves, because generally, like, as far as security stuff goes, Apple tends to be pretty responsible on that kind of stuff. They're not paying, which seems like kind of a jerk move, you know, considering that most other places do. But whenever stuff is found and brought to their attention, they tend to do what they can in order to get it resolved and resolve it quickly and make sure that that's out to people in a timely fashion. So it's going to be interesting to me to see if this means there's going to be a bunch more updates now that people have an interest. And, you know, I also wonder if part of the reason Apple wasn't offering a bug bounty program sooner is partially because they, there weren't enough people paying attention. So it didn't really matter as much. You know, they weren't as big a deal overall.
Kelly, I think one of the factors too, I just have a theory about this. I don't have any proof right now, but my suspicion is that in the earlier times, individual hackers would do this for fun and profit and make some money and exploit from archives, libraries, black market trading of information and so on. But now we've gotten to the point where there's nation state hacking going on. Governments are keen to break into phones for political purposes. Mm-hmm. Nation states are saying, well, if you're not going to have backdoors, we'll create our own backdoors from our library of hacks. And so I think that's what maybe got Apple geared up.
Okay. I can see that. That makes sense. I could see that happening. So I think we'll see how this turns out and, you know, keep an eye out if we do find anything notable. Of course, we'll have Charlotte write it up or somebody. You can rest assured there will be coverage at TMO of exactly this sort of thing, particularly if anything fun comes out of Black Hat, which is, like I said, kicking off today. So we'll see how that goes. But in the meantime, I think that's going to do it for us for today. So I would like to thank both of you for being here. John, thanks for coming by.
Very welcome. Good to be here.
Glad to have you. And as always, Charlotte, thank you for being here with me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.